You're listening to the Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
Welcome to the Religious Liberty Report, a weekly news briefing on religious liberty news, a program hoping to educate, encourage, support, and equip you, our listeners, on important issues of our day, but always approaching the issues from a biblical worldview.
Thank you for joining me on the Religious Liberty Report, this third week of July, 2026. For me, an honor and inspiration to bring you this weekly report and reminding you that the Church is called to be the moral, the cultural conscience of the nation. We must not stay on the sidelines and just let the culture do its own thing. Jeremiah 33, verse 3. We read of the promise of God, revealing hidden truths. It reads, "Call to me and I will answer you, and tell you, even show you great and mighty things. Things which have been confined and hidden, which you do not know." Jeremiah 33, verse 3. Luke 18, verse 17 reminds us that there is nothing hidden that will not be disclosed, nothing concealed that will not be known out in the open. Luke 8, verse 17. The Religious Liberty Report is a Christian legal ministry. We are attorneys advocating for religious liberties, freedom of conscience, the right of the people to freely live out their faith. In the public square, the marketplace, in our schoolhouses, our courthouses, and government, trying to get behind the headlines with analysis, approaching the issues from a biblical worldview. 1 Peter 3:15 tells us to always be ready to give a reason for the hope that is within us. Our goal is to help you engage friends and family in meaningful conversations on faith, religious liberty, expressing our faith. We're hoping to help equip you with some answers to some of the most important, commonly asked questions of our age. Religious freedom is a God-given right, grounded in the fact that human beings are made in the image of God, endowed with reason, free will, and an eternal soul. America's founders knew that government has a duty to preserve that freedom. That freedom for every person, every American, to follow his or her own conscience. Religious freedom for the Christian, the Buddhist, the Muslim, the Jew, and even the atheist, the unbeliever. Reminding you that the idea is not to win debates, but to win hearts, minds, and souls. Turning to page one of the report, this third week of July 2026, some good advice. Here's one. You cannot change people. You can love them. You can pray for them. You can encourage them. You can tell them the truth. But you cannot change them. Only God can do that. Here's another. Faith has never looked logical to the world. Building an ark without rain. Standing before an uncrossable sea. Facing a giant with a sling. Following a crucified Savior. God has always called his people to trust him before the miracle. If obedience makes you look foolish today, don't be discouraged. The story isn't over yet. What God promises, he always proves to be true in his perfect time. Noah seemed foolish until it started to rain. Moses looked like a fool until the Red Sea split in two. David, another fool until Goliath fell. And the disciples, they too looked like fools until Jesus rose from the dead. If what God asks you to do doesn't make sense, be patient. It will. God always has his version of the story. You may be thinking, oh, everything fell apart. God is saying, everything unnecessary fell away. You're telling yourself, they left me, they abandoned me, they betrayed me. God tells you, they made room for who's actually meant for you. Your mind tells you, I've wasted years. God tells you, you've spent years becoming who you needed to be. In your head, you hear, nothing is happening, but God is telling you, everything is being arranged. Be patient. Be faithful. Pray and watch. Watch and pray. You keep telling yourself, I'm failing. God keeps telling you, you're learning. You tell yourself, it's too late. God tells you, it's just on time. Boundaries, borders. We need to have boundaries, borders. Because if you do not protect your gates, the enemy will enter through those gates. In fact, in many cases, he already has. The enemy's inside the gates. It takes generations to build up the systems that cherish virtue, that uphold morality, virtue, faith, that teach these things. It takes actual commitment. And our job as parents, when we have children, is to pass these virtues, these values on to our children, to the next generation. It's our job to bring the next generation into a covenant of virtue as soon as we can. It's an important priority. Generations are not born and develop in a vacuum. We aren't supposed to improvise life, wilding it in the universe. That's not the way it works. We must inculcate virtue, cultivate it, protect it, pronounce it, proclaim it. Morality, virtue, values, faith. But the systems that uphold virtue and faith and these values, that cherish them and protect them, it takes generations to build those systems. Sometimes hundreds of years and many generations. But it can only take a moment for sin to tear down those systems. So if we don't protect those systems, they can disappear. And the next thing that happens is that our civilization, our culture, our country, our families, our communities, they'll be threatened. Because sin crouches at the door, at all of our doors. But the good news is that we can overcome it. But it requires effort, concerted, concentrated, persistent effort. And part of that effort is recognizing that in the long run, fleeting pleasures, momentary fun, transgression and sin, they will destroy your world. And the enemy knows this. This past week, we celebrated the 250th anniversary of this country's founding. I found this. If there's one thing Americans do better than anyone else, it's start over. Every town has a version of the same story. A business owner loses everything in a flood, then opens up again down the street. A family farm survives another difficult season. An entrepreneur's first idea fails and falls flat, but the second one changes the world. No, we don't celebrate failure. We simply refuse to believe it has the final word. Somewhere along the way, Americans decided that a setback is only temporary. It's not a life sentence. The conviction that builds companies, communities, and second acts. The opportunity to try again. America has always been a nation of builders. Drive across the country and you'll see. You'll see it for yourself. Contractors framing houses before sunrise. Welders working late into the evening. Farmers repairing equipment that's older than they are. Engineers sketching ideas. We don't just build skyscrapers and factories. We build neighborhoods, small businesses, churches, and families. Our greatest natural resource. People usually think of America's resources as oil, natural gas, minerals, farmland. but I think our greatest natural resource is optimism. The belief that tomorrow can be better than today. What convinces us to sign a new lease, plant another acre, invest in an unproven technology, or hire one more employee, even when the economy looks uncertain? Oil wells may run dry, mines run empty, but America has never run out of optimism. The loudest democracy on earth, Americans argue about almost everything. Sometimes politics, sometimes the local school board. The arguing can be exhausting, but also reassuring, because free societies are noisy. Free people have opinions, and oftentimes they differ. They challenge authority, write letters to the editor, stand up at town halls, and tell elected officials exactly what they think. History is full of countries where everyone seems to agree, and most of them weren't free. But America's an original. The world has copied just about everything America has made. From Hollywood to Silicon Valley, American ideas have inspired imitators in nearly every corner of the globe. But there's one American ideal no one has ever managed to duplicate, and that's freedom. Not just freedom to vote, but freedom to speak your mind, practice your faith, build a business, fail spectacularly, and try again. We do not have to agree to appreciate that America is extraordinary. And because America has spent 250 years surprising the world, we here at the Religious Liberty Report believe that America's most exciting chapters are still ahead. Turning the page on the report, some more truths that I want to share with you. Here's one. The goal isn't to predict every crash. It's to build a life that doesn't collapse when one comes. And this, when God says he'll give you back better than what you lost, believe him. And this, life has a simple formula. Look back and thank God. Look ahead and trust God. That's all. You're tuned into the Religious Liberty Report, this third week of July 2026. Turning the page on the report. A report on the Middle East. Americans are having to navigate around rocks, the reefs of rising inflation, collapsing consumer confidence, stagnant incomes, and potential job losses. They all play a role, but it seems that the biggest factor, the most consequential one, is the cutoff of oil, natural gas, and critical inputs from the Persian Gulf due to this war, the Iran war. The factors are related. Rising oil prices feed inflation. Inflation feeds higher interest rates. Higher interest rates feed the decline in consumer confidence, and so on. But there's no doubt that the blockade of the Strait of Hormuz at the mouth of the Persian Gulf is the key factor, the one that makes all the other variables worse for the economy. Though many Americans may not be able to find Iran on a map, they know exactly what the price of gas is at the pump. And we know that higher gasoline prices bring higher prices for diesel, jet fuel, ship fuel, the fuels that are the main inputs of transportation costs. Everything you buy and everything that arrives at your home or at your local grocery, by some means, it came there by transportation. And when those costs go up, the cost of everything goes up. The conclusion is that the state of the war is inseparable from the state of the economy. The stock market tells you little about the economy. Some say it's in a bubble. It's the energy market that is the key to understanding jobs, inflation, interest rates, and more. And right now, the Strait of Hormuz is the key that unlocks the energy market. Iran currently operates a de facto blockade of the Strait, firing drones, mining the Strait, and firing missiles at ships that try to pass without playing by Iran's rules. The rules are that any shipping through the strait must ask permission from Iran to transit the strait. And the permission amounts to tolls that must be paid in Chinese yuan or Bitcoin. Even if a vessel gets through the strait, it runs into a separate U.S. Navy blockade further out in the Arabian Sea. And all this is made worse by the refusal of Lloyd's of London to insure these vessels, except at exorbitant fees and rates. Peace talks have failed and are more propaganda exercise. And the markets are starting to see through this. At best, we had a fragile ceasefire that has since broken, 13 days ago as of this recording. Not much of a ceasefire. And experts are saying that Trump only has three paths at this point. One, surrender. Two, stalemate. And three, escalation. Surrender won't happen because the political damage to Trump and the loss of face are too much for the president to bear. Iran won't agree to anything that makes Trump look good. Why should they? Many are saying that they're winning the war. The second option, stalemate, in the form of another ceasefire. But that's not likely to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. So the third option is the most likely, escalation. The escalation trap. Could this become Trump's Vietnam? Could it ruin his legacy? Will it even open the strait if Trump escalates? The bottom line for Americans is that it's likely that the situation will continue indefinitely. And the most important thing could be that markets are not priced for this, for the shock to global supply chains and for the coming inflation. The markets are priced for a quick end to the war, a quick reopening of the strait. But when reality sinks in, we may be in for major drops in stock prices, higher interest rates, and an economic recession, or even worse. Already, the blockade in the Strait of Hormuz is increasing the price of oil, and by extension, the price of gasoline. We're seeing it every day. Regular gas is almost $4.50 per gallon, premium $5.30 per gallon. In high states like California, regular is over $6 per gallon. Are we in store for regular gas to be at $7 per gallon on average? Prices are up 40% or more compared to a year ago. And the hit to consumers doesn't stop there. You see, gasoline for your car is something you can't do without. You have to buy it regardless of the price. Because you have to get to work, take the kids to school, or go shopping. And everything you buy, whether it's food, clothing, furniture, books, consumer products, all arrive at the store or on your doorstep by truck. So the price of everything goes up because transportation costs are getting higher. One of the paradoxes, conundrums of the war in Iran is why the economy and markets have not been more badly affected. Yes, the price of oil, gasoline are up over 40%, but the effects of the closure of the Strait of Hormuz have not been extreme. In fact, stock markets are at or near all-time highs. Interest rates have been steady. Inflation, yeah, it's up slightly, but not at hyperinflationary levels. So with so much depending on the output from the Persian Gulf, why has the economic damage not been worse? Well, there's several reasons. Number one, in the first place, a floating pipeline of supplies had left the Gulf before the war opened in early March. This floating pipeline took weeks to reach its destination. This meant that supplies kept coming through March and into early May. But now that floating pipeline has run dry. And manufacturers, farmers, governments have been drawing down stockpiles and strategic reserves. But those reserves are running out. Will the narrative crash into reality? Is there a crash coming soon? 78% of Americans say that they expect the U.S. economy to be worse 1 year from now than it is today. It may surprise you to learn that everyday Americans, in the aggregate, are much better at forecasting abilities than professional economists and Federal Reserve models. So today, the Strait of Hormuz remains closed. President Trump wants concessions, but Iran isn't giving them. And some even think they may be winning this war. The ceasefire gave both sides time to regroup, rearm. But escalation is on the table again. Some are saying that escalation will not reopen the strait, and that this leaves the world just weeks away from severe shortages of energy and critical inputs like helium, sulfur, nitrates, and aluminum. Deliveries that left the Persian Gulf before the war have been completed. There are no more vessels behind them. Strategic reserves are being drawn down and are almost gone. Events will come to a head soon. Most will not be prepared, but we are trusting in God. And life is a lot sweeter when we realize that everything, literally everything, is in God's hands. No amount of worry, manipulation, or planning will change the perfect plan of God, the plan that He has for you and for me. Turning the page on the report, I found this. If a book is copied by hand over and over again for thousands of years, wouldn't mistakes, edits, and falsehoods naturally creep into the text? For generations, this was the primary weapon used by skeptics to attack the Old Testament. They argued that because our oldest complete text of the Hebrew Bible, the Aleppo text, called the Aleppo Codex, dated to 930 AD, there was a massive 1,000-year gap between the time the Old Testament was completed and our earliest complete copy of the Hebrew Bible, our earliest evidence. It was argued that critical prophecies about Jesus, like the one we find in Isaiah chapter 53, must have been altered by Christians later to make them fit the Christian narrative. But God has a way of silencing His critics. In this case, a Bedouin shepherd boy stumbled into a cave near the Dead Sea in 1947, discovering ancient earthenware jars containing a hidden treasure. Among them was the great Isaiah scroll, written on pieces of sheepskin sewn together, stretching nearly 24 feet long and dating back to roughly 125 BC. This meant that scholars suddenly, the world suddenly, had a manuscript that was over 1,000 years older than any Hebrew Bible previously known to exist. When scholars placed the Dead Sea Isaiah scroll side by side with the Hebrew text we have today and the one that we've been using for centuries, the results were breathtaking. The texts were 95% identical match, and the only differences were spelling variants, like the ones we would see in Old English spelling versus Modern English, or minor grammatical updates. Not a single doctrine was changed or absent. Not a single prophecy was altered. For over 1,000 years, generation after generation of Jewish scribes had copied the text with supernatural, flawless precision. So, you and I can read our Bibles today with absolute confidence, knowing that God has carefully guarded every single word in His holy word. And turning to the last page of our report, in this third week of July 2026, a thought, a statement on happiness. Your brain was not built to remain and stay happy. Happiness triggers were designed to fade. Every achievement resets. Every pleasure normalizes. Every arrival becomes a new baseline. You were built to want, not to have. You have been chasing something your biology was designed to make sure you never reach. Happiness. A process. A path, a journey, rather than a destination. As we close out this week's report, I want to remind you to exhibit grace, because faith and religion are often sources of controversy, and debates can be particularly fierce. People argue about religious liberty and the proper relationship between church and state, and these are issues that we must address, but we must do so without sacrificing grace. Without sacrificing grace and compassion for the world, for the lost. We must not sacrifice our Christian testimony. We can discuss the issues without sacrificing love and grace, and we must guard against becoming combative. Scripture exhorts us, commands us to contend for the faith, but we must do so with compassion and grace. And this may mean having a game plan for discussing your Christian convictions. Being able to explain what you believe in and why. Jesus never promised his followers an easy path. In fact, he told his disciples that the world would hate them. Jesus sent them out as sheep among wolves. Jesus' words came true in the lives of the apostles, and they're still coming true today in the lives of his followers around the world. Thank you for joining me on the Religious Liberty Report as we reviewed this week's religious liberty news. Sin crouches at all of our doors, but we can overcome it. But it requires an effort, and part of that effort is recognizing, in the long run, that sin is destructive to our world. Our goal shouldn't be to predict every crash, every controversy, every challenge. It's to build a life that doesn't collapse when one comes. Life has a simple formula. Look back and thank God. Look ahead and trust God. It's that easy. It turns out that life is a lot sweeter, a lot easier, when you realize that everything is in God's hands, and no amount of worry, manipulation, will change the perfectly intended plan that God has for you and for me. At the same time, choices are the hinges of destiny. Our choices. That's why we must thank God, trust God. We must trust God and obey. Watch and pray. Trust God and obey. Jesus is the gate. Whoever enters through him will be saved. They will go out and find pasture, because our Lord is good, and he cares for those who trust in him. God bless you. And God bless America.
Thank you for tuning in to the Religious Liberty Report, a broadcast intended to help equip churches and ministries on how to remain faithful to our mission in a culture that too often disagrees with our message. Tune in next week as we follow up on freedom of conscience, because without freedom of conscience, we have no other liberties. Alexander Alfano reporting for the Religious Liberty Report.
Oh, shame is a prison. It's cruel.